Tonight we are in the capital, London. It is the 15th largest city in the world, and it has been inhabited for the last 2,000 years. It has always been the centre of art, of culture, of education and finance. But this once great city is in serious trouble. People cannot afford to buy a house. There is huge poverty and deprivation in this capital city. We have major health inequalities as well in this capital city. And everyone knows this. There is rampant crime around this city. This hapless, hopeless, horrendous, woeful mayor is totally out of control. He has lost control of London. London is in total and utter freefall. But London has a lifeline. London needs reform. Good evening to you all from what is arguably the greatest city in the world. Tonight, I'm in central London and I'm joined by a quorum of over 500 proud reformers. Now, this is our biggest chairman's tour, our town hall event today. And with that in mind, we plan to make it one to remember. Don't we, London? Are you up for it? Well, look, London holds a very special place in many people's hearts. It really is a vibrant, exciting, dynamic city with an extraordinary history. It is the capital and it is the largest city of both England and the United Kingdom, with a population of over 9 million people. In fact, the wider metropolitan area is the largest in Western Europe. It has a population of over 15 million people. Now, the ancient core and the financial centre, that is the City of London, it was actually founded by the Romans as Londinium, and to this day, it retains its medieval boundaries. The City of Westminster, to the west, has been the host of national government and, of course, Parliament for centuries. And I think it's fair to say that actually London still exerts a strong influence on world art, entertainment, fashion, commerce, you name it. Finance, education, healthcare, media, science, technology, tourism, transport and communications. It is Europe's largest city economy and is one of the world's major financial centres. It's also home to several of the world's leading academic institutions, including Imperial College, where I trained at St. Mary's Hospital Medical School. In fact, that was the very building where Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin, changing the world forever. Of course, it's home to University College London, to King's, to LSE, to the Royal Colleges of Art and Music, and RADA, amongst many others as well. It also boasts four World Heritage sites. They are, of course, Kew Gardens, the Tower of London, the Palace of Westminster, and Westminster Abbey. And, of course, the entirety of world time is measured from this very city, from the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. Amazing, amazing accolades for London. So, what could possibly go wrong? Well, London's problems are manifold. The cost of buying or renting a home is exorbitant, leading to a record number of homeless people and forcing many working professionals to actually get up and leave the city. The cost of living, it has utterly skyrocketed. The NHS is in complete freefall, with residents complaining of a lack of access to GPs. And then coupled to that, inequalities in healthcare are profound. There are significant disparities in health outcomes between wealthier and poorer areas, with far lower life expectancy and health outcomes in the poorest parts. And we also know this too. Crime is out of control. Over 500,000 cases of shoplifting were reported last year alone. Over 100,000 mobile phones were stolen that we know about, along with 250,000 bikes. Low-level crime has effectively been decriminalised. I think it is fair to say that London is now lawless. Well, coming up on tonight's show, I'm going to be joined by three passionate guests to discuss all things London. First up is Alex Wilson. He is the leader of Reform UK in the London Assembly, and his job is to hold Mayor Sadiq Khan to account day in and day out. And Alex is going to give us an insight into his time in the Assembly and also to explain that crucial role of local government. He will also outline how Sadiq Khan is irreversibly damaging our great capital and why London urgently needs resuscitating. After Alex, we will then hear from former detective Peter Blexley. Now, he's a renowned policing and crime expert. He is best known as one of the founding members of Scotland Yard's elite undercover unit. That is known as SO10. He also became a familiar face as a star of Channel 4's Hunted. He's also the author of several highly acclaimed true crime books. And Peter will provide an in-depth look into crime and, of course, policing in London. He will also tell us how policing has changed over the years and what impact the recent rise in crime is having on our capital. And finally, we will be joined by our very own Westminster City Councillor, Leila Cunningham. She'll be reflecting on her time as a councillor to date and why she believes it is such a rewarding job. She'll also be urging others to stand as a councillor to represent communities across the capital. Well, my first guest tonight is a true campaigner. He really is, I think it's fair to say, a passionate reformer. He is also someone I have worked with for many, many years. In fact, we first got to know each other in the Brexit campaign and then in the parliamentary elections. And I have to tell you, he even organised my nomination papers. That's how much I rate him. Now, Alex was the first member of the London Assembly representing Reform UK. And let me tell you, he is doing such a cracking job. He tirelessly holds Sadiq Khan to account in the monthly Mayor's Question Time. He is utterly passionate about getting Londoners' voices heard. So, let's see him in action.
A year ago, I was elected as Reform UK's first London Assembly member tasked with holding Sadiq Khan to account. Now, in that time, I've challenged him on net zero madness, on two-tier policing, on immigration, on his relentless tax raid and his continual war on the motorists, but above all, on his failure to keep London streets safe in the face of a rising tide of knife crime. I will never stop fighting to save London.
I'm here today on Oxford Street, where this is the state of Sadiq Khan's London. 80,000 phones stolen on London streets in the last year. London is lawless. London needs reform.
Sadiq Khan is cutting 1,700 police officers and staff from the Met. At a time when there's a rape reported every hour, 70,000 phones stolen last year, knife crime up 17% and overall crime up 5%. Sadiq Khan is a danger to London. London needs reform. Breaking news, Sadiq Khan's just confirmed he'll be cutting 1,700 police officers and staff, and yet he's still spending £1.4 billion of your money every year on net zero. I say scrap net zero, save our police.
He's failing on the bread and butter of crime and policing. He's using this as a deflection from that.
Wouldn't it be great if you could stay here? Up to £200 a night, the rooms cost. Well, if you're an asylum seeker, you can. And it's you, the taxpayer, that's paying for this. £6 million a day hotels are costing you. It's got to stop. We've got to stop the boats. We've got to deport those who are here illegally. If you come here, if you enter this country breaking the law to do so, you will not be able to stay under Reform UK government. We believe keeping Londoners safe and preventing crime is our number one priority. But there's only one person on this panel who's actually got the power to do that, to put his money where his mouth is. He's actually spending more on net zero, £1.4 billion on net zero, £250 million more on that. So if you want to know what someone's main priority is, you follow the money.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alex Wilson. Alex, you and I go back a long way in terms of the Brexit Party, Reform UK as well. I was so delighted when you actually took up your place on the London Assembly. For many people in this country, indeed in this city, I don't think many people actually understand what the Assembly does. They don't understand why it moved from City Hall to where it is now at Excel. Just if you could explain to people what your role in the Assembly actually entails day to day, and why did you do it?
Well, the London Assembly is quite a strange body The Assembly itself doesn't really have much in the way of power. It's there as a scrutinising body. We have meetings, we hold committees, we do investigations. But ultimately, the decision-making within the Greater London Authority, which is the body that governs London and has control over TfL, the Met Police, London Fire Brigade, most of those decisions are very much held in the hands of the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. And so the main role that the Assembly members, and there are 25 of us, there are two now who are reformed, there was only one, but now there's two, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. The main role we have is to try to hold Sadiq Khan to account, because, my God, there is so much to hold him to account for. On all those key issues that facing Londoners day by day, housing, policing, transport, on all of those, he's getting so much so badly wrong. So holding him to account is keeping me very, very busy indeed.
What you say there, he is getting so much so wrong, I couldn't agree more. I've lived in London since I was 18. I don't recognise this city, actually, since certainly coming here when I was 18 years old. So if you were to rank those problems, and I mentioned them at the beginning, what are the biggest issues that you hear on the doorstep every single day?
I think there are four really key problems that are facing Londoners. One of those is down to national government, which is the state of the economy. We saw Rachel Reeves' budget last year where she absolutely hammered small businesses through the national insurance tax hike. That's had a really devastating impact on retail and hospitality in particular, which are really important industries in London because of the fact we're a tourist destination as well as being a financial capital of the world. So the economy, cost of living, is very much one of them. The other three are definitely three that Sadiq Khan has a lot of control over. Housing. It's more expensive and more difficult than ever to get on the housing ladder in London, whether that's for purchasing or for renting. So he's getting that wrong. On transport, London is the most congested city in Europe. Mm. We have this relentless war on the motorist. ULEZ, LTNs, 20 miles an hour, Blackwall Tunnel, toll tax, all those things, hammering the motorist. And then the biggest issue, though, is one we've touched on already. It's crime and policing. Mm. He is the Police and Crime Commissioner for London. He's getting that so badly wrong.
And also, I was reading one of your tweets saying that actually he promised not to close the counters in police stations, and he has reneged on that promise, which seems to be a thread across the Labour Party generally, which is you renege on the promises that you give the electorate when you go in to vote. But actually, closing those front counters is a disaster for London.
It's absolutely insane. So, yeah, how do you know a Labour politician is lying? Well, their lips are moving when they're making a promise. And we've seen that with Sadiq. He promised at the mayoral election last year when he was elected to keep a front counter, 24/7 front counter, in every London borough. Now, he's closing or reducing the hours at 35 of the 37 remaining front counters. He's going to leave five boroughs, that's Harrow.
And what's the justification for doing that?
It's a cost saving. But the actual money that he will save by doing this is only about £7 million a year. Yet he's going to be spending £25 million over the next 3 years decarbonising the police estate while slamming the front doors in those in the public space. Can I just say those five boroughs? It's really important to know the five boroughs that will be left without a single police station front counter if these plans go ahead. It's Waltham Forest, it's Harrow, it's Kensington, it's Richmond and Merton. Those five boroughs will have no police front counter. But there is something we can do about it. I've launched a petition. Mm-hmm. If you go, and this is the one thing I would ask everyone here tonight and everyone watching at home, if you go online to saveourstreets.london, sign our petition. I'll be presenting that to the next Assembly meeting to try and get the Mayor and the Met to change their mind on this.
So I always think the great bellwether in terms of policy is to talk to a black cabbie. They know more than anyone, because they spend the whole time driving around London. They will tell you vociferously what they think exactly of the London Mayor and what is going wrong in the city. Now, just in terms of that, you cannot move around London. You know, literally, those roads are being ripped up. As you know, the cycle lanes are going in. I understand that we need more people cycling, fine. But actually, that kind of the highway from Canary Wharf through to Westminster, it is impossible. It is very difficult to do anything. If you're actually trying to have a trade, if you're a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician, you can't actually get to the job of work that you're trying to be doing.
And you can't take your kit on a bike or on the tube if you're doing those jobs. You know, we believe as a party that people should have the choice to travel by whichever means they want to do so. And that means supporting the motorists in London. It means not ripping up road space and replacing it with cycle lanes, with bus lanes, with LTNs. We're the only party that really stands resolutely on the side of the motorists. Now, you were in City Hall last week.
I was. To
the event that I hosted, where we had a number of people from different motoring organisations, different experiences, people using London's roads, the problems they faced, and hopefully some solutions to that. But one solution, the easiest solution, is to get rid of Sadiq Khan.
So can I just ask you, though? Obviously that has great resonance.
Thank you.
See, you did this great event last week, and I was thrilled to be there, and many congratulations. You're doing such tremendous work there. But one thing that keeps going through my head is what drives Sadiq Khan? Does he actually care, or is this all about his profile and, I suppose, his career?
Well, I'm not going to cast aspersions on anybody's individual motives. Most people go into politics and get elected in the first place for the right reasons. But the problem with Sadiq Khan is his values are wrong and he's been there too long. Any person who's in a job for that amount of time, this is his third term, first mayor to serve three terms, you become stale. I think he's become complacent, and that's why he's not seeing the devastating impact that his policies on... Look, on crime, go back to crime, because it's such a big issue. In the last 3 years, the use of stop and search has halved on London streets. And yet, in that time, every year since the pandemic, knife crime has gone up, and now the level of knife crime in London is two-thirds higher than it was when he was first elected. The cost of Khan, we talk about cost of living crisis, cost of government crisis, we also have a cost of Khan crisis. His share of the council tax gone up by 78% since he was elected.
Wow.
And what are we getting for it?
Nothing. And also, when you look at central London, for example, what he's done to Soho, I think he's ripped the soul out of Soho, personally, and the nightlife economy as well.
Yeah, and partly down to him and his night czar, Amy LeMay, who was resigned last year and as a failure, but also with hospitality, with nightlife. The national insurance thing is a really, really big issue on those industries, because it's those part-time, younger, lower-paid workers who are really being hammered by this Labour government nationally. So we've got to get rid of Sadiq Khan in London. We've got to change the complexion of the London boroughs next year in the local elections. But ultimately, we've got to get rid of Rachel Reeves, Keir Starmer and the entirety of the Labour government.
Well, she may go, actually. Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, just judging by those headlines, I think Rachel Reeves is in serious trouble, actually. I'm waiting for some breaking news on what is going on. Just in terms of the makeup of the London Assembly, Keith now has joined you. Of course, you've got your second member in the Assembly. What does that do in terms of unlocking other things? Do you get more questions? Do you get more money? Can you actually hold the mayor to account?
So I've known Keith for a long time. We were both councillors for another party on the same council in Redbridge a few years ago. And I'm absolutely delighted that he's joined us, because he brings a wealth of experience in running Redbridge Council. He knows how things work. He also brings a wealth of campaigning experience and energy to that. But what it means for us as a group on the Assembly, it's truly transformative to what we can do, because it's quite technical and dry and boring. But as a group, which we now are as two, it means we get better access to committee places, we get the ability to table motions without needing the support of another group to get something discussed, and most importantly, in the new year, we will be tabling a fully costed budget amendment which will set out what our priorities will be for London if there was a Reform administration. Now, of course, the other parties will, in all likelihood, vote that down, but we can get it formally debated, minuted, and hopefully covered in the press, and we can use that platform, because what we have is a platform to share the views, share the ideas of what a Reform administration would mean, and that's why it'll be so important for people to go out in May and vote for Reform Council candidates right across London.
Well said, Alex. Just in terms of... Just in terms of the money that Khan wastes, he sees himself, I think, as the president of London. I've seen the motorcade that goes through London. I don't think he's ever actually walked anywhere. But also, he has 9 deputy mayors, each of them paid over £150,000. Why do you need 9 deputy mayors?
Well, on the motorcade, he's the only person that can actually park at City Hall. The rest of us have to use the DLR to get there, and it's in the middle of nowhere. It's a nightmare.
It is.
But the cost, the waste, it's endemic throughout the system. So as well as the deputy mayors, and some of them are probably better than others. My favourite one is the deputy mayor for environment and climate change, whatever he calls it, Mehdi Coban, a guy who spent 40,000 air miles going around the world lecturing everybody about the evils of climate change. Absolute disgrace. But no, the waste goes deeper than that. The head of the actual TfL commissioner, so not a political appointee, but an officer, he gets over £500,000 a year.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Do you think he's doing a good job running TfL?
No, I don't. Absolutely not.
And we tried last year to table the idea of cutting back the back office stuff. Since Sadiq was elected in 2016, the headcount in the back office has gone up twofold, the cost has gone up threefold. I wanted to try and reinvest that into frontline policing, dedicated knife crime task force. The other party said.
But also, just let's go back to that point you made about net zero. The fact is, he's spending more on net zero than on crime and policing. That is not what Londoners want.
Yes. £1.4 billion, his consolidated climate budget compared to £1.1 billion that he's putting in to the Met Police. It shows what his priorities are, and his priorities are not those of Londoners.
So last week I was in Liverpool. Now, this Liverpool is a very Labour seat, or used to be a very Labour seat, polling at 84%. They're now polling at, wait for this, 42%. We are on the ascendancy in Liverpool. We are now second in Liverpool. You're doing a tremendous job here in London as well. We, in London, we were polling at 9%, but thanks to all the hard work that you and the team are doing, we are polling, wait for this, at 20% in London and climbing by the week.
Absolutely. We are the challengers to Labour in London. We got 9% in the general election last year, but everything that the whole party organisation has been doing, and yes, I'd love to be able to claim credit for all of it, I can't. There's been a huge amount of teamwork behind us. Getting the branches set up is so important to delivering that local campaigning on the ground. The membership, off the scale. Council by-elections, we won our first seat as a gain in council by-election in Bromley a couple of months ago. And if you look at the changes in vote shares in those by-elections, that's catching up with where we are on the polling as well. So we are absolutely on the move. And with Keith joining us as well, it shows that we are, just like the rest of the country, here in London too, we are the fastest growing political party.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? And just in terms of that, as chairman, of course, I have to find 5,000 candidates to stand in elections around the country. I mean, that is no mean feat. And that roughly means I have to find about 9,000 to go through serious vetting. What would you say to people as a call to action here in the room, but also to people watching at home, about actually standing up? When I go around the country, people are so incensed, so livid. They want to do something about it. How do you convince people to say, actually, you don't have to have experience, you do need to step up, you do need to actually put your head above the parapet and stand?
Well, I think I said earlier on there was one thing I was going to ask of people here tonight, which was to sign the petition. Please do that. But the second thing I want people to do is absolutely apply to stand as a local council candidate. You don't need any prior experience. All you need is a passion for what you want to change in your community and in our country. And you know, there will be training, there will be support, there will be leaflets, there will be guidance from the party. But without getting candidates on the ballot paper, the polls are irrelevant. You need to be in it to win it. That means getting a full slate, or hopefully a full slate, across London and across the other elections as well in the country. That way we can really send a message to the other parties that we are absolutely here to stay and here to win.
Well, I think I speak for everyone here. I think you're doing a cracking job. Well done. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Wilson. Let's talk about crime now, shall we? Because in Sadiq Khan's London, we have witnessed a significant increase in crime. Muggings, knife crime and sexual assault all on the rise. Women and children no longer feel safe on our streets. And tourists, well, they're leaving as well. Just to reinforce those points, let's look at some of those statistics, shall we? Shoplifting. It's gone up 150% in just 4 years. More than 114,000 mobile phones were stolen last year. If you work that out, that equates to 312 phones nicked every single day, or more than one every 5 minutes. It is actually costing £50 million per year. And, need I say it, but hardly any phones are recovered. When we come to rape in this capital, one rape is reported, it is extraordinary to believe this, every single hour in London. Muggings are up 26% in 2 years, and London knife crime is at record highs. Since Sadiq Khan became mayor, knife crime has rocketed by an extraordinary 67%. And what exactly has Sadiq Khan done about it? Well, the answer to that is nothing. All we get are empty words, lies and excuses. And I'll tell you this. Londoners are sick and tired of being told that everything is fine. Families themselves are paying the price. And as we heard from Alex as well, businesses are struggling. And, crucially, the very reputation of our capital on the global stage is in utter peril. Well, one man who knows more about what is going on in London is my next guest. I have got to know him over the last few years, having interviewed him multiple times on my Talk TV weekend breakfast show. He is a renowned former detective. He is one of the founders of Scotland Yard's SO10 undercover unit. He's also an author of several true crime biographies. Let's see his story.
Everything that we hold near and dear Everything that was cemented into my psyche
as
a child is being chipped away, eroded and trashed. And we have to resist it.
We do.
Senior police officers, such as the ones that are responsible for these rape gangs carrying on their crimes, are often very quick to say in the media, we police independently from political interference. We police without fear or favour. Now the IOPC is saying, well, actually, they were under political pressure from the Home Office, so they prioritised burglary and car crime beyond and above that of child rape gangs.
How much or how many dangerous undocumented people are in this country that we quite frankly know nothing about. It is scandalous. There have been repeated failings, and I'm afraid as a result we are all a bit less safe.
Okay.
We did not sign up for this level of immigration, this type of immigration, and this fundamental lack of integration. That's what decent, hard-working people are worried about.
They are preying on decent, law-abiding members of society who work, pay their taxes, contribute, and they are alienating them. This is the bigger issue. They are alienating us. They are seen as the establishment. They're uniformed. They are. And it creates this greater divide between us and the establishment. And that leads to a low-trust society.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Peter Blexley. Now, Peter, we've known each other for a few years. I think I'm speaking on behalf of everyone here, which is to say, the reason I think you're so fantastic is you literally say what you think. You say the unsayable, you say exactly what is going on in London, in the United Kingdom. Why doesn't everyone else do the same thing?
Cowardice. Maybe they want to protect their careers or their positions or whatever it may be. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm a lot closer to death than I am birth. So whatever time I've got left, I might as well spend it telling the truth, trying to make a difference and getting paid for it.
Well, quite right. We'll drink to that. Now, let's just go back to you founding SO10, Scotland Yard's undercover unit. An extraordinary experience, actually. How did that come about and how did it shape your view of policing?
Well, at the age of 25, I walked through the front revolving doors of New Scotland Yard with my shoulders pulled back and my chest puffed out because I thought, right, here I am, young detective, I've arrived at the Yard. And back in those days, in the mid-80s, it had a global reputation for expertise and brilliance and the such like. Sadly, that reputation lies in shreds largely these days. And I suddenly discovered that there were officers there doing undercover work, so going out there, pretending to be what they weren't, drug dealers and the such like. And when I saw how they were doing it, I thought, yeah, I'll have a bit of this. And I suddenly discovered that I had a real propensity for telling lies. And also, I was a rather convincing gangster.
I can imagine.
And consequently, many criminals foolishly believed that I was one of them, planned to sell me drugs, guns, lorry loads, millions of dollars of counterfeit currency, and sometimes they hired me to kill people.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what was it like doing undercover work? Oh, obviously, you were a duck to water.
It was frigging terrifying.
Well, I bet it was.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, but it was also great fun. Yeah. Because many of the criminals that I spent time with were wonderful characters, and if only they'd chosen a different path in life, I think they would have been equally as successful.
And of course, what you did, you were on the front line, you were able to do what you wanted, which was to police. One of the things I hear from my friends who are in the police force is that actually they spend too much time filling in paperwork, sitting at desks, not actually doing what they want to do. Now, just in terms of everything that we've highlighted in London, whether it's about crime generally or the fact that we've got these terrible statistics on rape, whatever it is, what is going wrong in London?
First of all, and it grieves me sorely to have to say this, we cannot trust these crime statistics. The picture is actually, as far as I'm concerned, far, far worse. And my evidence to support that is that I spend a lot of time travelling around London on a daily basis. I sometimes sit in green rooms, for example, where other guests are being brought on to broadcast on any given channel. And I ask these people, well, they gravitate towards me with their crime stories, often young women who have been harassed, assaulted on the transport network or on the streets or had their phones stolen or often a lot worse crimes. And when I say to them, my one question, did you report this? Unfortunately, they shrug their shoulders, look at me and go, what's the point?
Yeah.
Because they feel they are not going to get a...
Yeah.
They feel that they will not get a prompt and professional investigation, so therefore they think there's absolutely no point.
Well, I think many people report it to get a crime reference number, don't they? So they
yes.
can actually then claim the insurance on the back of it. What about priorities for the Met? You know, this idea that Sadiq Khan is spending more on net zero than he is actually in terms of frontline policing, that cannot be right, can it?
Every day when I don't hear the name Sadiq Khan is a good day. Sadly, we're hearing it a lot this evening.
We are.
Pious little man.
So can I just ask you, let's just go back to your time in the force and people who are joining the force now. What I'm hearing, and I've interviewed a lot of police officers, is that actually the experienced ones have had enough and they're leaving. We've got lots of junior police officers coming in. They don't have the supervision of the older police officers, so they haven't learned the trade. But also, they're not allowed to actually do what they want to do.
True, in many regards. I unashamedly love the policing family. But when I say that, I mean the front line.
Yep.
I am frequently contacted, sometimes by officers, but predominantly by their parents, because they feel if they contact directly a noik like me, their career might be in jeopardy. I mean, what nonsense is that? But their parents contact me, and they say, do you know what? My son or my daughter actually loves the job when they are allowed to get out there, and guess what? Nick bad people.
Yeah.
They still love doing that, the front line.
They do.
And I have nothing but respect for them who want to do that. Trouble is, they spend far too much time sitting around in A&E, for example, with someone who's in the midst of a mental health crisis.
Yep.
Or they're dragged off of what would be frontline facing duties to do the guarding of prisoners and other vulnerable people and the such like. We've also got huge problems with senior police ranks and police leaders, the length and breadth of the country, because in 1997, when Tony Blair got elected, rue day, and political correctness became a thing, what actually happened was that the seeds, the tentacles of what we are now faced with, where we are crippled in so many public services by DEI and the such like, and people are not promoted on merit, they're promoted on whether they can sing from the right song sheet or not. What has actually happened is those tentacles have never been stripped out, and policing itself has been gripped by a kind of liberal, fluffy, progressive kind of mindset.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Which has taken it away from what the public want. What do the public want? They want to see their police. They want them to patrol. They want them to prevent crime. They want them to investigate crime and come straight back to it. They want them to nick bad people.
Quite right. Well said, Peter. So, Peter, when Reform UK becomes the government of this country and you become the head of the police service or you are put in charge, which I think actually many people would like, what would you do overnight to change the public's perception in the police to ensure that the public trusts the police once again?
Well, first of all, I've called Colin Sutton governor. Because he's got to be in charge. He's a much safer pair of hands than me. He left policing far more recently than I did, and he hasn't got half the skeletons in the cupboard that I have. although I've told about most of them, which is why I'd be absolute cannon fodder for the tabloids. There needs to be a refocus on the policing that the public want. There needs to be a complete reconnection. Unfortunately, I think during COVID, certain senior police officers enjoyed the kind of autocratic powers that were so hurriedly rushed through Parliament, and some police actually liked that. The streets were deserted, so crime was way down, and they were able to issue fines for people drinking cups of coffee, for example. Later rescinded, I remember, but that kind of thing. And I think there's been a bit of a hangover. Police has got to get back to policing. I'm pleased by some of the recent noises in relation to non-crime hate incidents.
Yes.
But until the appalling College of Policing, that kind of think tank that's not really fit for duty, until that gets kicked into touch, until the National Police Chiefs Council actually reconnects with what the British people want, and therefore that floods down to the front line, policing is still going to be crippled by the problems that plague it today.
So just very quickly and finally, if I may just ask you, I went to Tesco today. I had to buzz the door to get the doors open.
Yep.
This is how bad crime is in East London.
Yep.
The last government and this current government have effectively decriminalised crime. You can nick 199 quid's worth of steak and walk out and no one will do anything, and I've watched them do it. You can do that on the tube, no one will stop you. Just in terms of that, is the answer to tackle low-level crime, rather like Giuliani did in New York? And if we do that, and if you stamp out low-level crime, does that make a difference?
There's no such thing as low-level crime. You imagine you've spent a lot of money on your bike, and you travel to and from work on that every day, and that gets stolen. That's not a low-level crime.
No, sure.
Having your phone nicked is not a low-level crime. We're all handcuffed to these things. We rely on them. We conduct our lives through them. I don't like that kind of terminology. It's not low level to a victim. Unfortunately, and I'll try and shrink this answer as much as I can, the entire criminal justice system is in crisis. From policing at the front line through to the Crown Prosecution Service, underfunded, not as effective as it should be. Then we get to the courts. Crumbling buildings, leaking roofs, IT that doesn't work, and some courts that would work sitting empty because judges aren't presiding. Then we go to the prisons. I'm sure everybody in this room knows about the crisis facing our prisons today. And then we get to the back end of it, the probation service, who are only effectively managing about a quarter of their workload. That whole criminal justice system needs to be made fit for purpose so that it serves the public and not criminals.
Yeah, well, very well said, Peter. Well, I think what the country needs is common sense policing from common sense police officers or former police officers like yourself. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Blexley. Right, I'm just going to come over. This is the bit you don't want, isn't it? I'm going to talk to Sarah Poaching, actually, because I've missed you. I haven't seen you for a few days. Hello. Oh, wow. Lucky me. Just in terms of your constituency, we're talking about London tonight, but just in terms of your constituency, what are you seeing on the ground in terms of crime, what Peter says isn't low-level crime?
One of the worst things that happens in my constituency, which is Runcorn and Helsby, now on the streets of Runcorn, we're getting so much crime on these e-scooters and e-bikes, and it's definitely drug running. And the police, the problem is the police, there's not enough police to go out and patrol these streets, and it's in council estates, housing estates, and it's a real problem because the kids are getting involved at night time, and you've got crime on the streets. So what we need to do is reform, is get more money invested back into bobbies on the beat that can go out, patrol these areas and nick these guys, just as Peter's just said.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want, common sense policing,
common
isn't
it? Common sense policing.
Like Peter Blexley. Sarah, really good
to
see you. Thank you very much indeed. Right, let's go over here. What I just wonder, does anyone else have a story about crime? Hello, Andrea, how are you? Let's come over to you. As a mayor, what are you seeing on the streets?
I mean, it's basic stuff, antisocial behaviour, which is right across the country. And there's no place of consequence. That's the issue. Rural crime, white van man crime.
That's also very interesting, isn't it? Rural crime. That's something we don't talk about. I live in the country, but obviously huge problems with rural crime.
Absolutely, and it's just not getting tackled whatsoever. And then on top of that, you have, I mean, we have a lot of seasonal crime because we've got lots of seaside areas, but you don't get the extra police resources at the seaside area at the peak times, which is issues as well.
Well, lovely to see you. Thank you very much indeed. Does anyone have a story about crime, having their phone nicked, or anyone want to share anything? Not at the moment. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary how people lose their phones, they get their phones nicked. In fact, I was talking to someone who's had their phone stolen three times. They didn't report it. There's no point. They want the insurance. And, of course, what we're doing is essentially decriminalising crime generally. Let's move on, though. I now want to talk to an incredible woman, actually. She is a councillor for Westminster. She is doing a tremendous job. She also manages to juggle seven children. Her name is Leila Cunningham. Let's see her story.
I ask myself every single day, how the hell did we get here? And it's because of the political choices made by Labour and Conservatives. And they repeat the same empty line. We're tough on crime. No, they're not. They've left us with no police, no prisons, and no border control. The Tories in 14 years let in 6.5 million people. Thousands upon thousands of unvetted men who don't share our values and don't respect women. And if you dare complain, they call you racist or far right and arrest you for hate speech. Britain doesn't need more speech laws. It needs more police, more prison cells, and a justice system that actually protects the public, not censors it. This isn't just incompetence. It's a betrayal. It's proof that Labour and Conservatives have stopped fighting for you. We will be the toughest, clearest, most unapologetic government on crime this country has ever seen. It's finally our turn. It's time to put British people first. It's time for reform.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Councillor Leila Cunningham. I think it's fair to say you have burst onto the scene. You are literally on every single television screen every time I turn on. You're doing an incredible job. I don't know how you do that. Manage seven children. But look, you're in the office with me. I don't think I've met anyone who is as passionate as you are. You are determined to make a difference. What's it been like, that journey for you, into the public eye and the spotlight?
It's been interesting. I mean, you say I've got seven children, but they're all teenagers. So they want nothing to do with me.
Oh, well, fine.
You know, teenagers are a special breed.
Yeah, well, they are.
They're not the nicest of people at all times. But it's been, you know what it is? It's been amazing because I feel like I'm in therapy. I can finally say what I've always felt. It was very difficult being part of the Conservatives because you were sent to sell something that you didn't believe in. And now I'm finally part of a party that prioritises Britain and prioritises the British public, which is very, very refreshing. Mm. And the other parties, when you're at the Conservatives, it's always how can the Conservatives maintain power? It's how to maintain the party. Whereas, as you and I know, David, in reform, it's what does the country need? And that's where we take it from. And it's a very different type of politics.
So let me just take you back to when you first stood. Why did you decide to stand as a councillor?
Because I was tired of politicians destroying my city. Mm. I was tired of my kids getting mugged. I was tired of antisocial behaviour plaguing my city. I was a criminal prosecutor. I was tired of a criminal justice system that let criminals get away. Mm. Every time I'd enter Sainsbury's, I'd see a bunch of people walk out with stuff for free. I was sick and tired of it. And I said, I'm going to stop complaining and stand up.
Well, well done for doing that. I mentioned right at the beginning of this programme, I've lived here since I was 18 years old. I do not recognise this city anymore in so many ways. And of course, crime is a huge concern, but actually, safety on the streets. I'm seeing graffiti on the tube. I haven't seen that for many, many years. I'm seeing antisocial behaviour. I'm seeing gangs of kids just hanging out. We've also got all these terrible statistics on knife crime, for example, those rape statistics. Huge problems, not just for women and girls, but actually for people who are walking home late at night, people on shift work as well. Does that accord with what you're seeing?
100%. I mean, we have a mayor that's effectively deprioritised public safety. He's cut visible policing. He's halved stop and search. He's even managed to politicise that. And he's cut police counters. He's cut police stations. And now he's cutting police in the Royal Parks. He effectively, as crime goes up, he cuts police. And as a criminal prosecutor, you know, people say, oh, you always bang on about illegal migration. You know, it doesn't affect you that much. Actually, as a criminal prosecutor in Westminster, about 70% of the defendants were illegal migrants, and they were, you know, they get public defence. I had one defence lawyer stand up and say, you know, judge, my client just arrived on a boat, so we have to take into account how difficult that must have been. And of course, judge, he can't work because he's illegal. So what's he supposed to do? He has to steal. And you'd think the judge will be like, I don't care. No, the judge says, you know, why don't we order a probation report, get to know more about him, and see what the state, what you all can pay for him to make him better. And that was constant. I had to prosecute someone in a burqa. I asked the judge, can the defendant remove the burqa? And she said, no, you know, Madam Prosecutor, these are religious sensitivities. And she cannot remove the burqa. So I had to prosecute a faceless person.
But that's unacceptable.
Completely unacceptable, even in the Middle East, where my parents are from. You cannot rock up to court with your face fully covered.
So let's just go back to that. So are the judges hopelessly out of touch? Are they just scared of upsetting?
I think they're scared. People?
They're scared.
They're scared because we have politicians that have completely lost common sense and they've deprioritised the British public. They've deprioritised the people that have built this city. You know, I have residents whose children are number 400 on the list for social housing. Someone who's just arrived is at the top of the list.
Yeah.
How is that fair? I have a woman who's a resident, she's a bus driver, she cries to me and she says, you know, I've been a bus driver for 20 years, I'm so tired, I can't take a holiday. She says, but the person, she says, I get no help because she's just above that threshold for work where she doesn't really get help with her rent. And but you know, she says, that just means I'll work harder. Mm. And that is a British value. But she says, the person next door has just arrived, doesn't speak English, got a three-bedroom flat for free.
So that's really interesting. As I go around the country, I keep saying that is what people are telling me. It doesn't matter where I am in the country. This is about fairness or the lack of fairness in this country. And that is what is so upsetting to British people, which is actually they are not being looked after properly. We are not putting British people first, and we need to do that and do it urgently.
It's about respect. It's respecting the people that built this country. It's respecting the people that built this city. And the political class doesn't respect that anymore. And I don't feel that they prioritise us. And that's why I joined Reform, because I feel there is a really strong priority. We're not ashamed to be patriotic, but the political class have made it shameful to love your country, shameful to have family values. And that has to be reversed because...
Well, one of the other things that I keep saying is actually we're a relatively small party. You know, we have five members of parliament, two marvellous mayors and so on. We also have 265,000 members as of today, so I'm delighted by that. But it's amazing, isn't it? We're on the front page of every single national newspaper almost every single day.
Yes.
And I think the reason for that is we are not afraid to say things that the rest of the political establishment simply will not say. But it is what people are saying in the pubs, they're saying it in social clubs, they're saying it all over the streets, the towns, the villages.
And in those towns and villages, they've seen some of their towns and villages change. Mm. It's become unrecognisable. And I get sometimes... I was speaking at an event and the person... Someone said, oh, you know, they were talking about Islam and how it's a problem. And someone said, oh, it's a cult. And there was kind of an uncomfortable moment because I'm Muslim. But there are Muslim communities that come to this country and expect the country to change for them.
Yes.
And if the country doesn't change for them, they say you're racist. But there is nothing racist about wanting to protect your values, your way of life in this country. That's patriotism. And that's something that I believe Reform stands for and other political parties have not.
So does that make you... So does that help you? Because you can actually say, I am Muslim, I can't possibly be being racist. Does that help you in your arguments when certainly the broadcasters will level accusations at you?
Yeah.
They would certainly level at me or many of our MPs, for example.
Oh, they still level it. But because they will, no matter what you do, you could get, you know, it doesn't really matter who you are. But there's nothing racist about wanting to preserve your way of life. There's nothing racist about loving Britain and wanting to preserve British way of life. And it is, I think if you went to any country and you can't rock up to a country and say, I want it to change, and the people say, OK, we're tolerant, but we're not suckers. And I think that's what the people have to understand. And I think we've been shut up for too long.
I would agree.
I feel it.
And just in terms of that, I think we're all in agreement that actually what we need to do urgently is boot Sadiq Khan out of office immediately. If you were elected Mayor of London, what would you do differently? How would you actually sort this city out?
So I think the number one priority for Londoners, I mean, I'm born and raised here, and as you say, I've never seen it like this. You know, I used to play basketball in some of the roughest part of London. From the age of 10, I'd be on the tube with myself, and my parents never were worried that I'd be mugged or knifed or, you know, and now I do for my kids. So I think I'd want to see boots on the streets. I want to see every high street patrolled, and I want a message to police officers, because like Peter Blexley, I think the police are great. You know, I've worked very closely with the police. They put their life on the line for us for very little. And I think they should be respected, and they're not getting that respect. They want a mayor who says, we've got your back.
Quite right.
You do what it takes to keep us safe. We're not going to persecute you. We want you to prosecute. And we want a zero-tolerance approach. You steal something, you're going to pay for it. And you steal something from a high street, you're going to be banned from that high street for 3 years, just like we do for football banning orders. I want to see criminal behaviour orders that bans people from streets. I want to see police in hotspots, out of a nightclub. Women are so scared to get an Uber. There is a rape epidemic in London, and that's Uber drivers, black cab drivers, your workmate. And if you commit a sexual assault, I want them to know that you're going to prison for a very long time. There is no second, you know, there is no leniency when it comes to criminals, because Sadiq Khan effectively is only focused on punishing motorists.
Yeah.
You know, but he's deprioritised crime, and that's unacceptable.
So finally, if I may just ask you, I mentioned this earlier, we need to find more councillors, particularly in London, actually. The task is enormous. What would you say to people who are sitting there thinking, well, maybe I should try, maybe I should stand?
So I have been doing a tour of London and speaking at a lot of branches, and what I get is people tell me I'll get fired if I stand. I'm scared of being called racist. So when Keir Starmer called us racist, he shut down the democratic process because people are scared of being called racist. That's what he did inadvertently. It wasn't only a smear. But what I'll tell people to standing up, when you stand for London, when you stand for local elections, you're standing against everything that you hate about the country, and it all starts locally. You're standing against a government that works for the bureaucracy and stop working for you. A government that takes your money and you don't see anything in return. You can't get a GP appointment, you don't see police, and your schools are crumbling. You're fighting that, and you're fighting, more importantly, against a government overreach who wants to take away your freedom of speech, who wants to give you the digital ID, which will mean that your rights now will become privileges. Mm. That's what you're fighting, and it starts at a local level. It's not only bins and housing, it's a lot more. And it's time that we told London, reforms arrived, and we're here to stay, and we're not going anywhere.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Reform has arrived. Well, look, I think you're doing a tremendous job, and I think everyone here would agree. Ladies and gentlemen, Councillor Leila Cunningham. Well, there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we've heard from three extraordinary voices about the challenges facing London. Thank you so much to Alex Wilson, to Peter Blexley, and also Leila Cunningham for their candour, their insights, and also what drives them and how they believe that we really can change London for the better. The message on the ground here in the capital city couldn't be clearer. London is broken and London needs reform. Until next time, from all of us here, a very good evening.